You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
Now we have about, 60 or 65 podcasts all linked in one central location. And it's really, that's part of what helped make PodCamp possible. So I think, people talk about one of the biggest fears that I hear people express about all this new media is that, we're all going to be just sitting behind our computers. We're not going to interact with people in the real world. I see the exact opposite happening. I see it, making it possible for you to interact with more people in the real world. Because you meet somebody online and you share a common interest with, and you get to talking and having a conversation, and you really want to...
I thought it was the next session.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then you want to meet these people in real life. And, like, Rusty and I met from reading each other's blogs. And
aww.
Aww. That's so damn sweet. And so there are some other, I just wanted to open it up, just with some background on what we're doing and what my own opinion about it is, and just see what y'all think. And I have some examples of places that are doing the locally focused thing and having some success with it. And I know some people in this room are, so what do you think?
Yes. I know that you spoke of locally creating podcasts, but is there something about podcasting itself that can create communities, whether it be local or national or international, and what aspects of it is it that helps to create those communities? Is kind of the question that I would have.
Well, I can address that a little bit. I would say yes, because podcasting, most podcasts, especially the most successful podcasts, are about something. They're about a subject. And so just the fact that you have some center of conversation, some topic that if you're taking the time to listen to it, then you have some passion for that subject. That creates an opportunity for people to come together. I finally, just at the beginning of this year, put up forums for my podcast again. I had them in the middle of last year. I didn't take care of them properly. I didn't feed them properly. And they kind of drowned in a sea of spam. Around the middle of the year. And so I finally just got rid of the old forums and just built up new ones with some better software and a little bit more spam-proof. And one of the most serendipitous things I did, I didn't realize this would be a side effect, but I started up a contest. I do a science fiction podcast. We narrate stories. And I put up a contest for flash fiction on my forums just after they launched. And, just stories, 300 words or less. That got out in writing communities, and so a lot of people submitted stories, in through the forums. We got, in the first month that they were up, we got about 600 new members on the forums. And, thousands of posts, mostly talking about those stories. But those are still people. If they came in for that, then they get curious about the podcast, and they start listening. And, vice versa. So just having your community be about something and having some center of conversation, some activity that kicks off your community can really help things, because then the word goes out about the community as well as about your podcast. So,
and I would say, ever since Rusty and I started doing our podcast, our personal podcast that the two of us do is called Mostly ITP. If you're from Atlanta, you know what that means. If you're not, ITP is inside the perimeter. That's where you want to be, I guess. I don't want to start an ITP-OTP flame war in here, but I'm just saying. we cover Atlanta-focused things. And it's mostly ITP, because sometimes we're, in other places. But we've met so many people since we started doing this just over a year ago. We keep the focus. We keep it Atlanta-focused, because there's so much going on in this city that... Like, I always felt like, and I still to a degree feel like, there's so much, I know that there's stuff going on out there, but I don't know what it is. And I'll find out about it, 2 days afterwards, and I'll be like, damn, I really wish I knew about that. That's really cool. But, so we try to, find people who are doing really interesting things that aren't getting coverage, you know, in the Atlanta paper and stuff like that. And well, so yes,
the paper that shall not be named.
we could have a whole session about the Atlanta paper.
and give people a voice too, because if they are in the paper, they've got like, you know, two lines of a quote that might be even misquoted. You know, whereas our podcast can be from
political network.
Yeah, there was a misquote in the AP story yesterday, but anyway. Anywhere from 10 minutes to like 45 minutes are the length of our podcast. We talk to people. I mean, we talked to somebody, this woman who works for Piedmont Park. She does bird walks in Piedmont Park where you just walk through and observe the different birds. I mean, the AJC's not going to cover that, but I think that's really cool. I mean, I really like birds, and I think that's cool. And we did, you know, a 10 or 12 minute interview with her. And we get things, we cover things in a way that it's very like, I don't know, it's in the community. I don't know if that makes sense, but like we went to the Atlanta Pride Festival this past summer, and Rusty spent about 10 minutes talking to one of the street preachers that was protesting the whole thing. And that is one of our most accessed podcasts.
It's one of the top three most accessed.
It's very, very interesting.
We actually got a little mainstream press coverage. Mainstream-ish. Like
mainstream-ish,
press.
Yeah. It's
mainstream. Yeah. I don't remember the name of the outlet, but... After Elton
was one of the places that linked it.
They linked it, and somebody else did.
Yes.
You know, I'm completely new to the podcast thing, so I'm like coming here completely ignorant of everything. But I had a question. I noticed that podcasts can be print, they can be audio or video or a combination. What do you think the most popular are?
In terms of pure numbers, the most successful the ones with the biggest audiences are video podcasts. Podcasts like The Show with Zay Frank or Ask a Ninja or Rocket Boom, those things have audiences in the tens of thousands. That does not mean if you start a video podcast, yours will also have tens of thousands. you have to work really, really hard at building that up. But I think that because video tends to be more viral, people tend to talk more about the videos that they've seen, and also then that things can go up on YouTube and all of the different, other non-feed-based, non-podcast-based, accessibility areas that video has opportunities for that audio doesn't. However, video is also very complex to produce relative to audio. And also, there are fewer... There are fewer opportunities to access video in terms of people's commutes and things like that. So it really depends on your content. I wouldn't say choose one or the other based on.
Oh, so there's only audio and video, no text. I was wrong.
To be really, really technically precise, you can have like PDF enclosures in a podcast feed, but that's kind of a. No one really does that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's either audio or video.
And I would add to that sometimes when we talk to people, or when I at least talk to people who want to know how they can get started and what direction they should take, it seems like a lot of people are very excited and they want to jump right in and start making video. And I always caution people, if you're going to do video, you need to have a good reason to do it. Because as Steve mentioned, first of all, it is a lot more complicated and expensive and time consuming to produce. But also you're asking for another level of commitment from people. With audio, you can, I listen at work, you can listen in your car, you can listen while you're working out. Video requires a person's eyes and their ears. They have to be focused. And you really need, in my opinion anyway, to have something to show. I mean, I know Zay Frank does the thing where he just puts the camera on his head, but like I don't care about watching that. Like, if I don't want to sit and watch somebody just talk for 30 minutes because I can listen to them.
I'm sorry, but before you go too far from the video, what kind of budget would you have to have to do a video?
Somebody else should answer that.
$300 for a camcorder is all you strictly need.
And that's the minimum, and then you get into issues of one thing, to do video on a budget, one of the first hurdles you have to overcome is syncing your audio to your video. Mm-hmm. Listening to audio coming through a camcorder when you're on the other side of the room isn't going to be sufficient. So you have to record that. Now let's consider this. You've got 30 minutes of video that you, or say an hour of video, and just as you have ums and ahs in audio podcasts, you have little things that happen in video that you may want to clip out. So now you're taking chunks out of your video to edit it. Now you're losing timeline on your voice, and it's one. Even Leo Laporte had said, he said one of the hardest things for him to deal with his video cast is getting the audio to line up on the timeline of the video. That's just one thing. And if you're a video person, you know, there are people who do video, and they're like, oh, that's not a big deal. But for Joe Schmo, Joe, on the street, it's a big deal. You know what I'm saying? It's a big deal. You know, but on my audio, all I got to do is clip the ums and ahs, put my intro and outro, drop in my audio. It's a little bit easier to get into. And in my opinion, audio podcasts are much easier to consume. And I'm convinced that most of my listeners want to listen away from their computer.
Yeah, it should really be based on what you want to say.
Exactly.
What you want to produce.
I want to go back to something Steve mentioned a minute ago about audience too, and measuring it in, you know, 10,000 listeners or 5,000 listeners. Numbers aren't necessarily the most, for some people, for some things they are going to be important, but for some things, if you reach 100 people who are dedicated hardcore listeners, that's a lot more important than reaching 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 people who, you know, might passively consume it.
Especially at the local level, yeah. Tying it back to the community issue.
Absolutely.
We don't really care about reaching 5 or 10,000 people because we want to reach people in the community who are going to be engaged and active in the community, and so it's quality, not quantity.
Coming back a little bit to the topic here, I mean, one of the reasons why I'm new to podcasting, so one of the reasons why I came was the constant things I've been rolling around. I do a lot with the, you know, Progressive Summit and things like that. Looking at the small numbers of people that really have the time and interest to be involved in podcasting on a regular basis, and using this medium as just one more channel to either bring authentic voices from the community of people who are not even on network into another community that probably needs to hear from people that are not in the network, if it's on issues or politics or whatever. And then, so it's like inflow of community and then outflow of how to use podcasting on radio or on other medium that can then reach out to a broader network than people that are internet linked. And so that was sort of one of the topics I just want to throw on the table.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I don't know, when I go to, and I don't mean to dominate again, so please, everybody else, please talk.
And access to the
answer. But I just want to say that sometimes when I go to, like, conversations like this and people are talking about, you know, oh, it's the democratizing effect of the internet. That's a nice story, but, you know, let's be honest, you know, it's, if you are even on the internet, that's a privilege that a lot of people don't have. A lot of people don't have that access. And to think that, oh, it's all democratizing, you know, you're really being blind to the reality. And I think that's something that we always need to keep in mind. That, and I think the potential for this medium is for it to help give a voice to people who otherwise don't have much of a voice in their community, whether that's through people who are concerned with being active in the community and going out and doing interviews and encouraging people to speak, who, you know, and giving them a lot of time to speak and raise their voices. And then, you know, the question is, how do you get that back so that people listen? I guess that's sort of the harder question. But I think there is potential there to give voices to people who, so that we can all hear voices that we don't hear, and so that it doesn't just become an echo chamber of the privilege.
I think that when it comes to the grassroots level, which I think is kind of what we're talking about, you know, you talk about ITP, for instance, which, you know, we all can yuck up, but everything's about perspective. And when you watch WSB-TV News at Night or, you know, 11 Alive, you get a perspective. When you live in Sugar Hill and you're looking from a northeastern perspective, southwestern to Atlanta, I have a perspective. And I travel a good bit with my business and with the show. And sometimes I go to places and I'm like, you know, it'd just be nice to pack up and move to Denver, you know, just to have a new perspective on things. And but sometimes I go visit friends in, you know, Douglasville, you know, and it's like you get an entirely different perspective of the city. And one of the nice things about Atlanta is it's so big, everybody has a different perspective. And all of those perspectives cannot be portrayed in the major media, you know. They're after, you know, a million listeners. And so they don't want to, you know, it's a rare thing for them to do a story on the lady walking through Piedmont Park showing people birds, you know. But there may be a million people in the city who think, wow, you know what, if nothing else, I could go down on Saturday, hook up with this lady, and learn about birds in Piedmont Park. And there's enough people who have that type of interest. And then, you know, that's just, you know, birds in Piedmont Park. So there's a myriad of issues and things like that that communities can be built on. And I think tapping into the internet for doing that, you know, it started with forums and started, actually years ago it started with BBSs, but all of these little communities, you know, get built. And I think especially from whatever issues and whatever perspectives you each are coming from, understand that this is an opportunity to get to people who are interested in those things. And as Rusty said, it may not be 10,000 people, maybe only 500 people. But those may be the 500 people that you can count on to help you with that. I mean, how many of you would love, I don't know what type of volunteer work you do, but like I do trail work. I would love if all 500 of my listeners would show up on a trail work day. It's like, wow, we'd cut
your job would be easy.
It'd be great. But you have that potential. You know, if, let's say that your interest is, you know, getting a building put on the Atlantic Historical Society's list and getting renovated. Well, imagine that you have, you know, 800 people listening to your show, and you can get 200 of them out there that afternoon. I mean, you have that possibility of reaching an audience like that.
We were talking a lot about this last night, and I think it brings up an interesting point. We're trying to do a lot of local stuff with our. We have a podcast about good beer, about craft beer, and all that, and trying to raise awareness for that kind of stuff. And we're out of Nashville, and we're trying to do a lot of local stuff in Nashville that is kind of off the podcast, organizing beer tastings and getting together with people, you know. And we'd go into breweries and stuff and talk to them. You know, we're sponsored by a local liquor store that carries a lot of high-gravity beer, so we go and do events with them and stuff like that. So trying to build those local communities that way, that it's kind of off the podcast but supported by the podcast to kind of follow through it. And the question that I've kind of knocked around in my head and I've been kind of struggling with from a theoretical standpoint is, how do you build local communities, you know, physical local communities within your town or city or whatever, and foster that, as well as still fostering and building a national or international audience, and kind of walk that line without alienating either group, you know? Because if you put too much focus on your local community building, because, you know, and you really value that as we do, you risk potentially alienating all the other listeners who are national, international, because then it's like, well, you know, I don't care. This is just about Nashville stuff, you know, I don't really care. And we don't want to do that. We want to be able to kind of straddle both and give something to both of those communities. So I'd love to hear people's thoughts about how to successfully negotiate that line and be able to have both communities feel like they're a part without alienating either one.
In our experience with our show, Dr. Finnis and the Fat Guy, we started out that way. We were a local show, and then we expanded to a national show. And I think the challenge, I think a lot of this is looking at podcasting as just one tool in your arsenal of how you're accomplishing what you're trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. and not putting all the onus onto the podcast to carry all of the weight.
Sure.
So, but the way that we do our show and that we tapped into local and national is that you always have a local focus to your show, but then you reach out to national people and bring them as part of the show.
Mm-hmm. You could even have like an events calendar or something like that. For people to put information in about their local community. You could even feature people from other communities, like maybe once a month on your podcast.
Yeah.
I think you have to, in my show, I have international listeners as well. And the way I try to keep their interest is, my format is I start with international, national news, then go down regional, And the last thing I speak about is local stuff, because I want the people who make up most of my demographic to go away knowing that there's something, usually volunteer, all the volunteer stuff goes at the end, because I want them to sign off thinking, ah, there's a work party at Blankets, I should be there Saturday. Mm-hmm. So that's, I try to draw them into getting, you know, to not just sitting at the computer, to going and doing something. I think if you go pursuing the idea that I need to please all of these demographics, I think you'll get away from, I think you're more likely to have an issue than if you say, how can I break it up to where I'm touching on the things that, that everybody's interested in without being obsessed with that as a goal? I find people overseas, they'll never come to Chicopee Woods to ride a mountain bike. You know, they ride, you know, they're in Scotland riding, you know, past old ancient castles. But you know what? They think it's really cool, and they want to hear about, you know, something that happened at Chicopee Woods.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just have the interest in general. So I would say, who's not interested in beer, right? I mean, but think about this. You know, there are people in this country who are getting more and more turned on about Czech beer.
Right. Yeah.
And so where's everybody else on the planet? So, you know, if it's an interesting story, I say just go with it, because you're going to be surprised at who locally and internationally, who's interested in the most local
focused
thing in the world. And I'll have somebody from Australia saying, hey, I heard that story about, you know, Chicopee Woods, for instance. That is really cool what you guys are doing. You know what? I think we're going to try to apply that, and you'll just be amazed.
Yeah. Sure. I would say, yeah, you may actually be overestimating the impatience of you know, national listeners and, you know, just general audiences. You know, if you have a 10-minute long podcast and you have, like, you know, 1 minute at the end about, you know, Nashville stuff, no one's going to object. No one's going to mind. For a while, I subscribed to The Onion via mail. I actually got the paper newspaper in my mailbox. And what a lot of people didn't realize, if you just see the website, The Onion is actually like the creative loafing from Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh.
Yeah. It was actually like the college paper for Madison. Oh. And so, yeah, all of the ads in there for, like, you know, loft apartments in Madison and things like that. And so there's a whole lot of local stuff in The Onion.
Yeah.
But, you know, that didn't stop me from, yeah, reading through it all and, yeah, looking at those ads and things that they didn't apply to me.
Yeah,
content
was still applicable.
But it did not diminish my enjoyment of the paper at all.
I think it's interesting to hear about stuff that's happening locally in other places. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if I never go there, never do anything, I don't know. I just think it's interesting.
Yeah, don't fill your podcast with in-jokes or anything. But,
sure.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as I say, it's a general thing, and if you just say, in the context of it, yeah, that we have these events going on here, then, you know.
Sure.
And also make sure that you're getting the word out among local venues as well. Yeah, you know, the bars where you're organizing these tastings and things. Make sure they've got flyers up on the walls about your podcast.
Yeah,
I think that's, to me, one of the challenges, what you were saying earlier about getting people who are interested in your subject, the real challenge is discovery. The getting people to know about your podcast is the hardest thing.
Yeah, which takes a lot of target market research and, you know, pointed marketing.
Yeah.
Can y'all talk about that a little bit, marketing?
It's funny talking about target marketing. When we first started doing our show, we had an idea of who we wanted to reach, which was, we figured out guys, you know, our age, in 30s, 40s. We found out the total opposite. We're reaching women. Now, we
show?
Dr. Finnis and the Fat Guy. And it's about health. It's about health and fitness, and we have a fun spin on it, but it was the total opposite demographic.
You get surprised like that, that you'll find that. You know, you'll be amazed at who listens to your show. And it helps to get to look around when you start finding out, you know, you get a little bit of information and feedback about your show. Like mine in cycling, you know, we kind of in Atlanta have this, the cycling community in Atlanta has this idea that we have it so bad, you know, that there's no bike paths, there's like, the people just want to run you over and kill you for being out there, and that, all of that is true. Other cities, and we think they're the utopia, like, you know, and I found that, you know, as I go around and read blogs around the country, for instance, Portland, Oregon, you would think would be, you know, such a progressive town, and cycling is so important there. And, you know, we had an issue in the city here where our local radio station disc jockey was ticked off because he passed a cyclist and didn't want him there, and got on this huge rant on the radio about how, you know, people should just go out and knock these people off the road, and it caused a big controversy. And I'm reading this blog in Portland. The same thing happened there, you know. But what it did was it gave me a perspective about that you know, the issues you have here are very similar to the issues other people have in other communities, which is why they come back to your show and they say, even though it's local, they're like, you know what, I can identify with that. We're having the same problem here. So you just never know what folks, you never know who's, you know, your demographic may actually just blow your mind who they are.
Yeah. I would say the holy grail of the whole thing, the real key, and it's harder than it sounds, is to have content that makes people want to talk about it. To be able to put your audience to use in bringing in other people who they know. Almost all of the podcasts I listen to myself, I didn't discover by looking them up in a directory or something. It's because someone I know told me about them and said, this is really funny, or this is really good science fiction, or whatever, you know, whatever they were interested in. They got me interested in it with their personal recommendation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of podcasters, this is one of my bugbears in the podcast community. There's so many podcasts at the end of the thing. And vote for me on Podcast Alley, and add me to your favorites, and Podcast Pickle, and all of this crap that they tell you to, that they tell their listeners to go out and do. It doesn't benefit the listener to go and vote for you on Podcast Alley, all of that stuff. It's just ego boo for the podcasters. And, you know, and I don't think listeners really, you know, how many people actually go to Podcast Alley to find podcasts you want to listen to? Yeah, I didn't think so. if you even heard of it, listeners have never heard of these places. So I don't go into the whole vote for me anywhere bullshit. I tell people, if you like the podcast, tell a friend, blog about it, yeah, mention it on your live journal, whatever, yeah, what, if you like what you're hearing, if you don't like your hear what you're hearing, yeah, tell people about it. And that is my request to my listeners. It's not to do anything for me. It's just to talk about what you're hearing. And yeah, that's my ego boo. I don't check my Podcast Pickle rankings. I check Technorati. And I look to see how many people are linking to me in their blogs.
Yeah.
And I've got a pretty good Technorati ranking at this point. Technorati is it's a search engine. It's kind of like Google, except it only looks in blogs. And it actually it keeps track of whose blogs are linking to whose other blogs. And so basically it's a way to kind of gauge the size of a conversation on the internet. And so, you know, to me, that's really the key, because far more people have heard of me either from being mentioned in other people's podcasts or from, you know, having been boing boinged a few times. I've been lucky about that. Cory Doctorow likes my podcast. Mm-hmm. But, you know, those are the sorts of things, getting people to talk about you and say what they think. And it's not always easy to have the kind of content that inspires people to want to talk about you. Having something that's slightly controversial can help quite a bit. Having things that really entertain can help. There are a lot of avenues to it. It really depends on what it is that you want to put out there. But you have to have that excitement go out to your audience, because there's so many things we watch and listen to every day, but only a few of them. Yeah, of all the TV shows we watch, there's just a few that we actually want to talk about with our friends. And what are the attributes of those that make you want to talk? And if you can figure out what those are and then try and get that into your podcast, it's a challenge. It's not easy. And it takes practice, and it takes experience, and it takes you really caring about what you have to say as well.
Yeah. Another method to grow your show is tap into those bloggers and the other podcasts mm-hmm. that do exactly what you do.
Right.
Yeah.
Get them in as guests. I mean, that's something we've been doing, is we've been finding bloggers that have weight loss journals and things like that, and then we are interviewing them on the show. I mean, going back to the Technorati, it's easy to find other people that are talking about your same subject matter and mm-hmm. just inviting them on the show.
Yeah.
You get their list of
their
customers.
Well, then, but by putting a spotlight on them, they're mm-hmm. going to say, hey, I was in on the
yeah.
show.
Yeah,
and I would even further extend that even to local people in your community who may not be in social media, you know, who
right.
like, say, just a, mm-hmm. a trainer or somebody who
sure.
may be at a gym, you know,
right.
and have them on, because they're going to go back to the gym and tell everybody,
exactly.
hey,
yeah.
look, I was interviewed,
yeah.
come check that out. And that's
right.
the way
that
kind of,
your local followers,
yeah, that
right.
forged that, take the podcast offline, kind of, you know, it's like
and
podcasting
that,
offline.
Right, with your situation, that would be
yeah.
easy. I mean,
yeah.
there's many
absolutely.
Restaurants.
Yeah.
And
yeah, and I think that with a lot of podcast topics, that's
right.
mm-hmm. really possible.
Well, we only have about a couple more minutes, so if anybody has any final thoughts or issues or questions.
I have one thought, actually, something that you were just saying, actually kind of, this suddenly formed in my head about, you know, the importance of having a conversation between, you know, getting other podcasters in on yours and vice versa. And it occurs to me there's a huge difference between talking at people, talking to people, and talking with people.
Yeah.
And if you're talking with people, then, you know, that's the ideal. If you're talking to people, that's okay. If you're talking at people,
yeah,
they're never gonna, you're never gonna really fully engage them.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a good thing to end on if nobody has anything else. Thanks.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of UnConcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.